Hello, welcome to Poet Runner, and my name is Rafael Alvarado. Today I have, as the running guest, will be Jason Taran, and I also have Bill Gaynor as the poet, and he'll come later in the show, but first we're going to talk to Jason. Howdy.
Hi, how are you, Rafael?
I'm pretty good. You just completed the Boston Marathon. How did that go?
Well, I actually didn't run it myself. I did part of the course. I was there spectating.
Okay.
But my girlfriend ran it. For the first time, she qualified with the New York City race in November 2021, and I was so excited to run it. And just staying in Boston that whole weekend from Friday to Tuesday, I mean, the whole city, the running community, and if you never ran the race, just even go to spectate. You will get so much inspiration and motivation to keep running. I definitely recommend that.
That sounds great. I've been trying to qualify for Boston, but I'm like, I'm about 40 minutes short from qualifying.
Yeah. I qualified. Well, I ran a marathon late November of 2021, but it was a week after the closing of Boston. And last year, the qualifying time was exactly the time that they set. So I would have been able to run Boston this year, but it was just I was a week past the deadline.
Okay. But you've run Boston before.
I haven't, actually. I just got into marathons. No, I just got into marathons last year with New York, actually. I ran New York. November 4th, I believe, 2021, for the first time. That was my first marathon. And I enjoyed it so much. 2 weeks later, I signed up for another one in Philly that same month. So I did two back-to-back.
So how many have you ran so far?
So far, just those two. So I have one coming up later October 2nd. I live in New Jersey, so it's this New York race called the Wine Glass Marathon. Should be a good race for me.
Yeah, cool. No, when I first started, I did three in, I think, and three in like 9 months.
Wow.
That was like 2005. Because, like, I mean, I enjoyed it. I don't know what it is about marathons. I just, when you wake up and you're kind of nervous, then when you start and you're going, you just go.
It's everybody has a different experience, but from what I gather, everybody asks, "Oh, how'd your first marathon go?" In the end, they all have a great experience. Maybe not at that moment when you ask them, but, you know, 2 days after, 3 days, they say, "Oh, it was the most fun I ever had." So it speaks to itself.
So how was the pain at the end of the first marathon? Because I remember the pain, I could barely walk after the first marathon.
Yeah. So it's funny you asked me that. I come from a lot of, like, endurance sports. I do a lot of ultra running, and I've never felt that pain in the marathon. Like, I've gone for 6-hour events, 8-hour events, 12-hour events, and the New York City Marathon, I never understood what the wall meant, but as soon as I hit mile 20, I was just like, wow, this is what it feels like. And after that, I was like, all right. It's just me against my mind. Let's get to the finish. And I felt it that day for sure. I started a little too hot in the beginning, which obviously you never want to do, but it's just, you know, New York City, it being your first race, you just kind of go with the flow of things.
You know, I've seen a lot of people start too hot, and I learned, I don't know, when I first learned not to go too hot was, I think, the second or third marathon. And I just learned how to pace myself and, you know, pay attention.
Yeah. I still have a lot to learn. Every runner has a lot to learn, but pacing is one of those things where that's the first thing you should learn.
Well, actually, you know, I try to save myself so I can at least sprint towards the finish line when I finish, so I don't look like I'm, you know, I don't want to crawl through the finish line. I've seen people walk the finish line. I don't want to do that. I want to run through it.
Yeah. New York is funny because the hills are really what gets you. And the last part on the last 10Ks, basically going up Fifth Avenue, which is an ever so slight incline, but at mile 20, it feels like a mountain almost. And then you get back into Central Park, you got downhills, uphills, and then you finish on an uphill finish right at the last 400 meters. So it's an interesting course design, but definitely saving some energy for that last 10K is paramount. That's really, if you want to have a good New York City marathon, make sure you save yourself for that last 10K because it's brutal.
Yeah, I can imagine. You mentioned ultra, like long runs and stuff like that. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so I started what I would say, I guess, my running fitness journey a few years back now. I think 2017, I signed up for something called a Spartan Race, which is it's an obstacle course race, or OCR for short. And, you know, I went to the gym. I didn't really run a lot, but I thought I was rather fit. And with those obstacle course races, it was a 5K distance, you know, it ended up being about 4 miles. But in the mountains, it was all uphill, downhill, and, man, it definitely kicked my butt. And after that, I was like, all right, I got to start running. Started ending up falling in love with trail running. Like, trail running is so, so much fun, especially with the people you go with. It has a community in itself. So I ended up falling in love with trail running. And then as I progressed, I did my first ultra running or ultra event, which an ultra run is any distance theoretically past a marathon distance. So anything past 26.2 miles is considered an ultra. So I ended up doing the Spartan Ultra Series, which I basically did every ultra event that they did in 2018 all throughout the United States. I think there was six of them, six or seven for that year. And it's nice because all the events are in different parts of the country. And one of them I was able to do in Lake Tahoe, which is probably my favorite one. I obviously live in New Jersey, so I've never been to that side of the country. And the mountains out west, Tahoe, awesome, awesome place. I was in Breckenridge. The altitude there got me a lot because, you know, they put us up to, I think it's called Peak 8 in Breckenridge, which is like 13,000 feet. That one really wasn't my greatest race. But just being able to run the trails in different parts of the country is just awesome, awesome feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine. I like trail running more than I like running in the street. When I train, because of time, I got to run in the street, but I prefer, you know, going to a trail because, I don't know, it's more peaceful and no scooters and no bicycles and no cars almost hitting you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the rules are out west, but here, even like some trails are specifically just for trail runners or hikers. You know, no mountain bikers can come on, stuff like that. So it really, peaceful is a nice way to describe it because it really is just you and nature and you and the trail.
Yeah, I'm doing, my first ultra is going to be the Bulldog Run, and that's 31 miles.
Nice, nice. 50K, awesome.
I think it's, I think that the Bulldog's all trails, so I'm actually looking forward to that because I'd rather run trails.
So will that be your first one?
Yeah, that'll be the first time I do more than 26 miles.
Awesome. And what's the date on that one?
That'll be August 20th. So I got time.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. And where is it? In California, is it? Or?
Yeah, I think it's up away is California, but I know it's in trails. And all I know is I like the name Bulldog, and then it said it's 50K, which is 31 miles. So like you said, anything past 26 is an ultra. So I can, you know, say I ran an ultra.
A 50K eventually, is the best kind of ultra to do in the beginning, just to start out.
I want to work my way up to
50Ks under your belt. Yeah.
I want to do 50 miles, but I want to be prepared for it. I mean, how do you train to run all that? How much hydration do you need if you're going to run that long?
You know, that's a great question. It depends on the course, the weather. You always want to stay hydrated. That's number one. But nutrition is so, so important. And, you know, I don't really like too many sugary drinks, but I take water, obviously, Gatorade, some sort of electrolyte drink.
Yep.
So that's very helpful. But the biggest lesson I've learned in ultra running is even when you don't think you're hungry, you got to eat. Even when you don't think you're thirsty, you got to drink. Because if the thirst or the hunger ever starts catching up to you, you're done. You can't recover from it anymore. You're going to fade pretty well. So you're always like, even when I'm not thirsty, it's a colder race. Every 90 minutes, I'm sipping something. Or every 45 minutes, I'm taking a gel or a piece of a waffle or something. Because you always want
to stay on top of it. What about protein bars? Do you eat any protein bars?
I have a sensitive stomach, so some of the things don't really mesh too well with me. So, like, I think a protein bar for me is a little too heavy. But it's weird what ultra runners and just trail runners in general eat. Like, if you've ever been to an ultra race or a trail race, some of the aid stations, it's pretty funny what they have. Basically, like, think of a third grader's lunchbox. That's sometimes what the aid station looks like.
Huh. I've been thinking about what I'm going to do when I do the 31 miles, and what do I need to carry, and do I need to get, like, a different thing to wear around where I can carry things, like, say, like food, you know, like a bar to eat while I'm running, because I think ahead.
Yeah, you definitely want preparation is definitely good advice. I always look at the course map. So ultras somehow differ how they design them. Some events are point to point, which is those are harder in my opinion. But some have a big loop and some aid stations around. And sometimes for like a big, let's say you're running a 50K loop. Sometimes for a 50K loop, it might be smart to get like a hydration vest. I use the Salomon one. I really like it. If it's close to the body, it's got two flask water bottles that are 16 ounces each. And it's got some zippers and pockets for storage. Some ultra events, they just do like loops and loops of a section, maybe like an 8-mile loop. Then you start back at the finish and then you go for a 6-mile loop and then start back at the finish. Those, I think, have its advantages because this way you don't have to bring all your nutrition. But those are harder in a different way, I think, too.
I can imagine. So how many ultras have you done?
I think I want to say close to 20 almost now.
So you've done more ultras than marathons.
Yeah. I started my first road half marathon, I think, was in late 2018. I always prefer trail running over that. But now that I'm starting to get into road running, you know, I'm pretty competitive. So now I'm trying to hit these certain times, and it's just as hard as running an ultra. But
yeah,
in my opinion, different experiences, you know.
No, I'm definitely wanting to run more trails than I want to do. I do the LA Marathon just because it's the LA Marathon, but I really don't like the course.
Yeah.
You know, just, I do it
know,
just
the trail,
because it's there.
I think the trails, you know, everybody says, oh, how can you run a 50-miler and run the next day or the next 2 days? The trails, depending on the course, you know, they're softer on your body. Like, I see some athletes lining up to a trail race, some well into their older ages, that, yeah, they had a running background, but, you know, they find the trails easier on the body.
Yep. I could see that. I don't know why. It just feels easier. I mean, there's less. The funny thing is, and people ask me why I say this, I don't trip when I do trails. I trip in the city.
That's funny.
The concrete that's suddenly there. There's the concrete that's suddenly there. When I'm trail running, I'm paying attention. When I'm running in the street, I feel I don't have to pay attention. But I guess I do because erosion makes a sidewalk pop up, and you clip your foot, you go flying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but
trail running, I just don't seem to have to pay as much attention.
No matter what, and at the end of the day, is running, you know, and it's what's the what you get out of it that's the most enjoyable part about it.
Well, I know it's an endorphin thing. I mean, that's I'm addicted to the endorphins, to that.
Yeah, I heard your first podcast on that, and I totally agree with you. I'm a pretty person, but when it comes to my running, I become so selfish. Like, God, this is what I want to do. I want to get this feeling.
Yep.
I want to run this mile, and that's the time where it's just, you know, I become really selfish, and I want to go out for a 4-mile run. I want to go out for a 2-hour run. Like, whatever I want to do, I just once you get your mind set up to it, it's fun. But Raphael, man, if I can convince you to do more ultras, that's that's the way to go.
No, I'm already my head's already in ultras. I already want to get there. It's just a matter. Also, the thing is, you know, it's like you said about the mindset. Even though when I'm going through crap emotionally, BS, if I don't run, it's worse.
Yeah.
I feel more depressed if I don't run, if I stop.
In my first 50-mile, I remember, and it's this person told me, and it stuck with me ever since. It's like, if you want to run a mile. If you want to experience a different life, run a marathon. But if you want to talk to God, run an ultra. And it's
there
so
you go.
Funny.
That should be on a T-shirt. Been on a T-shirt because I'd probably buy it.
You know, depending on how long you're out there on an ultra, the marathon, yes, you go through different roller coaster emotions, even in a shorter distance, a 5K half marathon, but once you're on your feet for 5+ hours, 6+ hours, you know, almost literally half the day, you just kind of, you go in a different place.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think each run has a different mindset. When you run a 5K, your mind's like, okay, this will be done in a few.
Yeah.
Half marathon, okay, it's only 13 miles. Then 26, you start to build your head up more like, well, I got to finish.
Yeah. You know, I get the I'm pretty grateful that I get the opportunity to run with some of the Jersey City runners, and I always tell them, like, no matter what distance you're running, you always want to just remind yourself to just run the mile you're in. Once you start thinking about, oh, how am I going to feel at 5 miles later? No, your mind always has to stay positive, no matter what distance you're running. So just always remember to run the mile you're running. And worry about later.
No, I try to just keep going. I mean, when I finished the Surf City Marathon, I told my friend who got me there, it's like, just leave me on the floor. She said, what do you mean? When you get the car, I'll get up. But for right now, I'm just going to stay on the floor. I don't think she quite understood, but yeah, I think when she came back and saw me still on the floor, you're still only a few minutes, I'm like, yeah. You know, I mean... Oh, I think, I don't know, I love the sense of, like, the finishing. It always feels great.
Yeah. I mean, it was a different feeling for me during the marathon. I did New York, and I just knew that the last 10K really screwed me up. I could have rammed that a little better. And then my second one, I stuck to a more conservative strategy, and I did so much better. I knocked down almost 10 minutes off my time. So it was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So when you're training, what do you do for nutrition? I mean, everybody has something different that they take all the time, protein, pre-workout, or, you know, Benny got me into vinegar shots. I mean ginger shots.
My nutrition is probably a little different. I don't want to say long, you know, every run is subjective, but for my like 60 minutes to 90 minute runs, if it's not too hot and humid, I don't really take much nutrition at all. But during the day, obviously I always eat a lot or eat a well-balanced diet. And I do drink water throughout the day, but sometimes on my 60 minutes to 90 minute runs, I don't really take nutrition. I don't really take a gel, only like in races or something that I'm going 2+ hours. I would do, you know, carry nutrition with me. But I'm trying to think what kind of, I don't really take. I mean, I started using the Morton gels. I don't know if you've heard about those. I started using the Morton gels last November, and I really liked them a lot. But before that, I stuck to the Honey Stinger gels during some long races. And for my ultras, I eat like those Honey Stinger waffles. I like those a lot. But nothing for me. I'm just so sensitive with my stomach that I don't really go out too crazy. Some people, you know, can eat like in the ultra running community, like carbs are pretty big. So people eat like a potato, mashed potatoes, a whole potato. Like to me, that's too much food for me to eat while I'm running.
Yeah, I can imagine.
8 hours.
I forget, there's an ultra runner who talked about eating pizza while he was running.
Yeah. I wish I could do that. But in theory, if you're burning that many carbs, ingesting carbs, you kind of balance out. But some people are just a little more sensitive to what kind of consumption of food they can do and how their body would react to it after. And some people can be like, oh, hey, yeah, that like Swedish fish looks pretty good right now. Let me stuff 10 of them in my mouth. I'm not that type of person.
I have no clue how my stomach's going to be when I try to run an ultra, how it's going to be affected by what I eat.
You got to practice.
Run.
Yeah, practice. That's what I could tell you.
I think I'm going to have to
even
practice
if,
eating
you know,
on the run.
Yeah. And I tell everybody, oh, you want to run an ultra? If you run a marathon, you can run an ultra. There's no question about it. Pretty much similar to what you've already done. And it's a good distance to kind of just build yourself up. And me personally, like with my ultra running, I never run over the distance. You know, so if I'm doing like a 50 miler or 100K, you know, I don't train for 100K by running 100 miler. Just to me, it doesn't make sense. But I would go out for like a 4 to 5 hour or 6 hour run and practice my fueling. This way, come race day, I'm already prepped.
Well, we got to give you the 2-minute warning because the other guest is on the line waiting to come on.
Oh, yeah.
It's been great
talking
to you. It went really quick. You know what? I think I'm going to have to expand the show because I want to actually talk longer from now on because I really do enjoy learning because I definitely learned a lot about ultra marathons that I didn't know, which I'm going to have to learn because I'm eventually going to do them.
I'm so excited you're doing it in August, and I can't wait to hear about it from you.
I'll probably have you back on. I already told Benny I wanted maybe to come back as a guest host. Eventually, you know, everybody that comes on the show, I'm probably going to ask to come back and do something or maybe review a product or do something because, you know, I enjoy the show and I love runners so much, I wouldn't mind sharing, you know, what I get out of the show with them.
Yeah. You know, there's so many avenues you can take it, and I won't take too much more of your time, but you can take it like, what training programs work for you, or, you know, what did you do, what didn't you do, and yada, yada, yada. But
we could probably continue this conversation on another show eventually because there's so many things I didn't ask.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for coming on.
Leaving the topic to a further conversation, I always recommend also for ultra running, strength. Strength, you got to do some strength work because your body's
going to get beat up. I lift weights every day.
Yeah, we can talk about that another time, but strength, a
sure,
lot of
runners. We could probably
do
it in the next 6 months. Maybe, you know what, I'll have you come on after I do the bulldog run.
Okay, sounds good. I love it.
Yeah, say hi to Benny.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks a lot.
All right. Enjoy. Take care. Thank you.
Bye. And now we have Bill Gaynor on the line. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, I'm okay. I had a little problem getting into you, but I finally punched the right button.
I appreciate the effort. Nah, you know what? Richard had the same problem, too, so man, you ain't the only one. But today we're going to be talking about your used poems, A True Story, from 2003 to 2021. And I love the book. I love what you do with the short poem, which I don't know if I do it well as you do, but I love the way you start them and the way they end.
Yeah, well, you know, it's always been a deep love of mine to do the short poems, and you know, I learned it early, and I kind of stuck with it, and I still do longer poems. You know, I read a bunch of them last night, but the short poem is always something my first love. You know.
Yeah, they're really well done, and I love the book.
Well, thank
you. I mean, there's not a I haven't found a poem that I don't like. You know, I love the. I don't know. It's just the way it flows and the way it comes out. It's great.
Yeah, they set it up nice. You know, I was real happy with that, and those guys back in Kansas City, Spartan Press, they. Planning on doing small press, but they're planning on doing 60 books this year, so that's impressive by itself.
Actually, I respect any press trying to get something out, and you know, the effort that's put into a poetry book, because I mean, poetry is not a big seller, and to have that faith into publishing a poet, that's a lot of faith.
Yeah, well, I think one of their benefits in life is that they own a bookstore. So Prospero's Books back there in Kansas City, Missouri, not Kansas City, Kansas. And they do a lot for the community, and they put on a lot of shows and stuff. And that's how I met them. I went back and did a 3 or 4 years worth of their festival back there, and had a ball every time. And then I got a call from them here a year or so ago to maybe do a selected, you know, and I said, sure, you know, can we do short poems? And they said, whatever you want to do. So that was great.
That's great.
So, yeah.
So how much work went into compiling this book? Did you do the editing, or did someone else edit the poems and pick the poems, or did you pick the poems?
I got to pick the poems, and then we, you know, we pulled a couple out and put a couple more in, you know, that kind of thing. What I did is I just went through the different books I had rather than just going through a slush pile, and pulled out a bunch of poems out of each one of those shorter poems. And then they wanted a little section of new poems, so we did that as well. And I'm real happy with it, and it's all kind of homegrown. The cover picture is from a friend of mine, Ryan Snellman, up out of Seattle, and I did the reading up there a few years back, and he took that picture. We were having breakfast. Actually, I think we were in Portland on that deal, and I really liked the picture, so we put that on there, and it shaped up very nicely, you know.
Oh, it's a good cover. It's I like the picture a lot.
Thank you.
You know, covers, you know, people don't understand, having a good cover for a book means a lot. I mean, people, that's the first thing they see when you look at your book, the cover.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Got to grab some attention.
Walking down the aisle, you know, looking for something, that's what they see, you know. And hopefully you can get it. They set it there with the cover pointing out, you know, instead of just the spine. So, no, it's all great, you know. I mean, yeah, this book's doing well. It's selling well. It sold well last night. So, we had a good show last night here. They call it a pop-up for the. We have a poetry festival coming Saturday here, and it's the Sierra Poetry Festival, and so it's a kind of the show was kind of to bring attention to them, as well as myself and another gal pushing our books, you know. So, and we both sold well. We had a big house, and it was a lot of fun.
Do you want to read any poems from the book, like, you know, so people can know what's in the book, so they could possibly think about buying it?
Oh, maybe I can pull something out here. Let's see.
I really like Advice from a Cynical Soul. That's a good piece.
Yeah. I don't even know what page that's on.
47.
47. Okay, let's go find 47.
Oh, that's a great piece. I like the beginning and the ending.
Yeah, well, thank you. Bye,
go ahead. Sorry.
You ready?
Yep.
Learn to write the short poem, something you can read while falling from a 10-story building. Develop substance. Learn to project. It's advised you have memorable material when accompanied by the oohs, ahs, and screams of the spectators. It's not suggested that you would be pushed, but there are several of us, myself included, who would freely volunteer to unlatch the window, clear the pigeons from the ledge, and hold your wine glass should you decide to jump. That was from a long time ago. I wrote it for open mic readers. They were driving me nuts at the time.
Oh, God, yeah, I give you stories about open mic readers. I mean, at some point, you don't want to have to go to readings with open mics because you feel you've been, I've been at this for like 30 years, writing poetry and reading and putting readings together, and sometimes you just don't want to deal with open readers.
Yeah, I know, but you got to give everybody a chance to get their feet wet, and that's how you learn. You know, you get up there and throw your stuff out and hope somebody loves it. I mean, I remember one reading I was a guest, and they had the open mic last, you know. So everybody's kind of hanging out and being nice to people. And this one young fella gets up there, and he's got a wad of stuff, you know. I mean, it's not in a binder or anything. It's just a big wad of stuff, you know. And he's reading this stuff, and it's kind of the evolution, revolution kind of stuff, you know. And he drops it, the whole wad, and it just goes everywhere on the stage, you know. And he looks at me, you know, like he's looking for advice, you know. And all I could say was, just pick something up and keep going. I mean, it's all kind of the same, son. And that's what he did. He just kept going, you know, so... But anyway, you know, I was talking to a few people who were real curious to get into the game, you know, last night, and a couple of young ladies, and one gal was very, very bashful, you know, but very polite, and I thought, and I told her, she says, how do you do it? How do you get up there? I said, you just get up there, you know.
Yep.
I said, be big and bold, you know, just throw it out there and hope they love you. And if they don't, write another one, you know. So
that's how you can do.
Yeah, so, you know, the seasoned writers always need to give the young folks or the just entering the game folks, give them a chance, you know. But they will
give everybody a chance. I try to give everybody a chance.
I know. You give me a chance, man. You know, we've been around. You and I have been doing things off and on over the years for a long time now. It's been wonderful. You know, I really love new joint you're working with over there, you know. I got it out of it when I was on the way home on the plane. I was thinking, you know, because when we did the reading, I kind of had a heck of a time finding a parking place. You know, I didn't realize there was a parking lot back. And then, you know, and then I got thinking, you know, it was on a Sunday afternoon, and there's a big Catholic church right across the street, you know. Everybody's in church. That's why you can't find a parking place, you know. But it was great.
I didn't even think about that.
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful center for the arts that they have there, you know, that Avenue 50. And they run it just great. And you guys ran your program just wonderful. So it was all good.
I appreciate that. I've actually been doing stuff there since 2001. I've been doing stuff at Avenue 50 off and on.
Yeah. No, they have
a
nice venue there. And they have everything available that a person would need, you know, plenty of seating and Boy, they got, it's almost spooky. They got more little rooms in that place than you can imagine looking at it from the outside, you know. You go, wow, where did this come from?
Oh,
and they keep it really clean and real neat and nice, and it seems like anybody and everybody are invited in, so that makes it wonderful, you know.
No, I've always tried the readings to make people feel welcome, you know. And
yeah, I felt really welcome. I enjoyed it. It was great to see you and Richard and Connie and a few others that I hadn't seen in a while, and it was just nice. It was great.
Well, I mean, I'm basically getting back into doing reading series again. It's just, you know, I just want to be busy now. I want to like doing this show. And doing anything else, I'm just trying to get back into it, you know, and just keep moving.
Well, that's kind of what I'm doing, you know, just what I told them last night. It's kind of like, you know, it's a new beginning, you know, because we all been down for 2 years, and, you know, nobody's been traveling, nobody's, been doing open mics or anything, and now we're kind of breaking back open, and it's nice. It's nice to see people, and it's nice to. And last night, you know, everybody was, being respectful, wearing their mask, and doing all that stuff, kind of stuff. Is kind of at a dinner bar and a dinner joint, you know, but anyway, it was cool and had a good time.
So.
Got a good reception. That's always nice too.
That's good when they pay attention.
Yeah. You know, well, you know me. You know, I like to have fun, and I think the folks had a lot of fun. You know, and then we just rocked around. And,
so, did you do any of the Zoom readings?
I did a few. You know. And it didn't feel that personal to me, you know. And it's like you have to have a setup to do it, you know. It's with a nice background and make it look comfortable, you know, and stuff. I mean, you don't want to do it with a dirty shirt hanging on the door, you know. That kind of thing. But I did a few, and like I said, I kind of enjoyed them, but they weren't really my thing, you know. And I got a friend that did a few of them, several of them, you know, and he did them all outside. And they came off pretty good, you know. And so, you know, he had kind of a taste for it, you know. But,
I think there's pros and cons to the Zoom readings. A lot more people can see you read, and a lot more... You know, you can have people all over the world on Zoom, and more people know about your book. But the problem is, people can't buy your book because you're not
there
in person.
You plug them to Amazon or whatever, you know. But no, it's a different venue, and it's a nice thing to have when we had all that pandemic issues where we couldn't get out, you know, and everybody was making demands on. Make sure to keep everybody healthy, or try to keep everybody healthy, and that part was part. You know, I got nothing bad to say about that. But
here do I.
Well, you know, I mean, it's what are you gonna do? You know, you don't want people getting sick, and geez, we had a lot of people ill, you know, during that thing, and we lost a lot of people, and that's terrible. You know? I'm glad that it's kind of showing signs of. Flipping over the hump. I don't know if it is, but it's showing the signs of doing it. Maybe we'll be fortunate.
Well, we're gradually getting back to normal, but it all takes time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, me and Kay Saint Marie and I, you know, being older, you know, we don't take a lot of trips and that kind of thing, and then. We're still wearing our mask and that kind of stuff when we're out, and she's very careful. And I was with Evan Myquist and his wife Eva, and she's very careful. You know, she's a little older. They're a little older too, and she's real careful with the hand sanitizer and wearing her mask and all of that. That's not, you know. So And, you know, I have nothing bad to say about that. I mean, if that's the proper way for you, that's the proper way for you, you know. And I hope, you know, that more people would take advantage of that to ensure that, like, the kids don't get sick and stuff, you know.
No kidding. So, a question I hardly ever ask.
Huh? Yeah,
when
you
did
got
you first start writing poetry? Hmm?
Oh, shit. Way back when, probably 17, 18 years old. What's that? That's close to...
Wow, that's 50, a long time.
60 years ago, you know. And
when did you first get published?
I think I got first published in probably 1969, 1970, somewhere around there. The war was still going on, you know. Well, I shouldn't say the war was still going on. Hell, there's still another war going on.
Yeah, there's always a war going on.
Seems like it anymore, man. It seems like it's just terrible. Yeah, we got a flag out in front, you know, in support of those folks. And hopefully Russia will just lay off and let them be, but who knows, you know.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I want to say unusual, but I don't think it really is. But to see the courage of those people and the fighting in them, and all to hang on to their piece of dirt, you know. And
yep.
I guess we would do the same thing. I guess we have done the same thing, you know. So.
We have, in our way.
So. In some ways, you know, but the thing I'm not liking right now is we still have this kind of segregation going on, you know. We're letting one group of people freely into America, and we're holding other groups of people at the Mexican border not letting people in, you know. It's like, come on, guys. You know, I'm from Santa Cruz, Watsonville. I don't give a shit about people's nationality or anything, you know. Hell, in my neighbor,
no,
you know.
Either.
Well, it's that kind of gets to me a little bit, you know. Like, you know, we raise the kids up with people, and the kids raise up their kids with people, and all that kind of stuff. So it's I don't see any difference between you and me, you know.
I understand that.
You can probably run down the block, and I can't, you know. And I'm not going to bother trying to get in shape at my age, you know. But, no, anyway, so we got off talking into politics a little bit. But
that happens. We segued. But, yeah, we could always go back. You could actually push the book some more and read some more poems. Just pick something you like from your book.
Yeah, I'll just flip the page here.
There you go.
Read a couple of little guys here just for the heck of it. How a killer eats spaghetti. I like my marinara with bow tie pasta. You don't have to mess around to get it on the fork. Just stab it once and it's done. You know, the death of a swing set. This is a true story. I kind of accidentally moved into this gated community a few years ago. We sold our house, our little ranchette thing, you know, to one of our kids. And the wife found this little place down here, and she liked it. So I came and looked at it, and I kind of liked it, you know. And I heard all these kind of odd, nasty things about gated communities, and we haven't experienced any of that. Except a couple, you know, and this is one of them. It's called The Death of a Swing Set. The guy from the association stopped by, asked about the swing set, wanted to know if it's safe. I said, it's a swing set, man. He said it could cause a hanging, suicide, something ugly. Somebody could get hurt. that it's dangerous. There's no fences to keep the kids out. I said, it's a swing set, man. It's for the kids. He said, it's got to go. Gave me 30 days to appeal before the committee. We tore it down, burned it in a pile, prayed over its ashes. Now it's just a scar in the yard where kids don't play. You know, people and their rules.
I
think
that.
People make up rules sometimes just so they have something to try to bully you around with, you know.
Yeah, actually, I can see that. Yep. You had a poem in there called A Cat Named Kevorkian I liked a lot.
What page is that, do you know?
Let me take a look at your table of contents.
I don't remember any of the
cat names. Well, you know, just because you have a book doesn't mean you know where everything's at.
That's true, that's true. I generally start from the front and go to the end, you know.
I don't know, just the way you write, the way you end things, the way you begin things, it always works. I mean, there's a lot of poets I've heard reading is like, ah, crap, he does not know how to finish.
You know, I do write in form, and it's, people don't recognize it, but it's a very common form. It's projected verse, you know, old, what's his name, Joseph Olson, I think is his name.
No, it works. I found the page. It's 126.
126. Michael McClure turned me on to it. And it's about, you know, your air. You know, you kind of keep your lines to where they accommodate your air. You know, how much you talk in one sentence, how much air you have. And it's worked for me, so I use it, and Michael used it. Only thing is different, you know, different subject matter. He wrote more about, you know, the environment and that kind of stuff. And then he centered his poems down the page. You know, it's I don't do that. I don't care for that look. You know, I mean, it works. They're easy to read and everything, but it doesn't look correct to me to do that. A Cat Named Kevorkian. The bird stood on the ledge, threatening to jump. The cat paced below, hoping to assist in the suicide. How much do we really know about one another's meanings when we do things, you know?
No kidding. That's a great little short piece. It says a lot.
Thank you. You know, it's the redemption. How about the redemption of natural law? If you look tasty, you will be eaten.
You know? Yeah, I remember. It's funny. That poem makes me think of like when I was on my federal vacation. Everybody was watching a hawk bird for hours, and they would not move from it. And I'm like, that just seems kind of weird entertainment to me, but they did not budge.
Yeah.
And I just walked away because it didn't interest me. I mean, I saw the hawk get the bird, bring it down, and then I saw a crowd of guys just watching that bird getting, you know, eaten. I'm like, not my idea of entertainment.
Yeah.
I guess they got something out of it.
Yeah.
It's just things you pay attention to. So what readings do you got coming up? Any places you want to plug that are coming up that you're going to be seeing at so people could know where to see you?
They want me to come down to Davis. I'll probably go down there here in a month or so. In Sacramento, I always love reading in Sacramento. And,
I've never read in Sacramento. I do not know the experience.
Well, I tried to get you up a few years ago, and You had something come up. You had to stay in town and take care of business. So, but anyway,
I appreciate that.
They've been knocking each other around down there too. It seems like this COVID has made people irritable. So the young people kind of had a at the Poetry Center, so they took it over. The older people got run off, and not all of them, but a lot of them. So they started the Sacramento Poetry Alliance. And actually, they're
nice.
both good groups, you know. But the young people, they're still learning how to act and stuff, you know. So they'll get around to it sometime. But it was kind of funny to me to see that happen. And then we got a couple of guys that call themselves publishers and stuff. And, you know, in the small press industry, it's just there's a lot of people just taking advantage of the low-hanging fruit, you know. And there's
yeah, I know about that.
Stepping in, doing that, and I hate to see that, but you know, you can't yell out, no, don't do that, you know. And, but I kind of stay back a little bit, but I gotta get reading down there. And then there's a place called Locke. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Mm-mm.
A friend moved down there. Oh shit, 10 years ago. Maybe even longer, and it's the last Chinese, or the only Chinese-founded community in the States. It's an actual town, and it's old,
huh.
You know, it's falling apart, and they keep it in a state of arrested decay, you know. The buildings
yeah.
aren't all painted up or anything, but they're all, I mean, the roofs don't leak and that kind of stuff. And it's a community lives there, you know, community of people. And, you know, they have an exposition or, you know, garden, you know, and different things. And they do a lot of cultural events during the year. And they do a lot of poetry readings and other things. I might take advantage of the opportunity to go down there and read and spend a day,
cool.
You know. Nice little place on the side of the river and behind it is the delta. So, you know, they have a few little restaurants and things in there. And it's very active, you know. There's things going on all the time, especially for the young folks, the kids. And so I might take advantage of that. Who knows? And then the Bay Area, you know, I don't go,
yeah.
like to go to the Bay Area too much anymore. I prefer to go to L.A. I'm trying.
Why is that? What happened to the Bay Area?
Oh, it's just they're very political on everything, you know, and it's always the same. And they're really kind of hooked up on the racial thing. And I don't blame them at all. I don't blame people for being concerned about those issues. But, and they're justifiable, you know. We've got kids down there getting shot at the train station.
Yeah.
You know, and the BART and different things like that.
Yeah.
And you guys have the same problems down there. But that's all reflected constantly in the writing of everybody down there, you know, and it's like...
So there's not much difference in the writing, and that's all you hear.
Yeah, it's kind of like you have to suffer through it, you know. There's a few people that really step out, you know, and make some noise, make some good noise, but a lot of the folks are kind of stuck in that realm a little bit, or as they're coming up, they're... They have to work through that realm, you know.
Yeah, no, I get that because
it's not really where I'm at, you know. I like to, you know, be vocal in my politics, you know, but at the appropriate time. And some of the organizations, you know, they're really strong in defending. Marginalized groups. So if anybody says anything about a marginalized group, they're asked to leave or whatever, you know. And I don't care.
No, I don't like that either. I think people should.
Well, if you're gonna talk
be able
about,
to speak their piece.
Yeah, freedom of speech. It has to go
yep.
all ways. You
Both
know?
Ways. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
no.
It's not that I don't like people. It's just that that's some stuff I don't. care to be around too much the older I get. I do like, you know, we have a Croatian flag hanging on the front of the garage and that kind of stuff. And a couple of months we'll have all of our political signs out front and all that stuff. And we'll make our voice heard but, in what we believe. And I'm sure other people have the right to do it. But it almost seems like a lot of times when you're in that environment, it's just getting crammed on you, you know.
And then that's what I don't like.
Then it turns to the other side, because the people that don't cram it on you become sarcastic about it, you know.
Yep.
Like, this doesn't mean anything. Well, it means a lot, but it's just, you know, it's just difficult, you know. So, I am glad that some people, you know, do step out and make that noise. And we're up here, we're worried about fires and droughts and that kind of thing, you know, and negative politics as well, you know. It's negative behavior. Like I said, you know, the border crossing issue, you know, us being from Santa Cruz and Watsonville, that irritates me a lot, you know. It's I believe in open borders. I mean, you know, the Latino community has been up here taking care of our needs for years and years and years and years. And now, you know, since Trump was president, you know, he really wanted to put a stop on it and build a wall and do all this shit.
Which
and
never got built.
He's probably hiring the Latino fellows to go out there and build the wall. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, which is kind of silly.
Yeah, it is. It's all silly to me. You know, I don't see any reason for it. You know, that's one of my
problems. I don't either. I hate to cut you off, but we're coming close to the end. You want to read one more poem? Because we got about, actually, we got 2 minutes.
2 minutes, huh? Let's see what we got here. How about something a little more risque, shortly risque?
Sure.
Connecting with God. I do my praying in the shower. Seems to get better reception there. I'm feeling the need now. Join me. It's a small shower. You can kneel first. There you go. You there?
Cool. I love the poem, but actually gotta wish you goodbye and thank you for being on the show. It's been great, and I look forward to seeing you next time you're down here.
Oh, you bet. We'll do something, you know.
We will.
Embarrass ourselves somehow, you know. And
That's what we do.
Great to see you. I wish you and your son the best. And
Thanks a lot.
I see you periodically on the Facebook, you're getting big, boy, I'll tell you. And, I'm sure he's got a lot of love around him. Okay.
Yeah, he does.
We'll talk to you later,
Thanks
man.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye-bye.
And quickly before I go, I want to mention Discovery Printing, which has basically been making all my T-shirts for sponsors. They're out of Glendale. You can look them up. Discovery Printing has been giving me all my T-shirts and tank tops for my runs and my marathons. Also, quickly, Insane Labs is a company I want to bring up. The insane whey I'm using and their psychotic drink has kept me going on my training for marathons, and this show's over, and thank you for listening.